Hello, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner. Welcome to another episode of What the Hal. And as I sit here talking to you, I've got in my hand a smartphone. Now, that doesn't seem like anything unusual, right? I mean, it's like just a computer that we live with all day long. We walk around like zombies. We would, if you lose one of these things, it's a terrible thing. You don't know what to do. And so technology has come to mean a lot to a lot of people, but there are a lot of people that could use additional help, whether it's because they're blind, they're deaf, or perhaps they have some physical disability. That's where adaptive technology comes in, and that's what we're dealing with today. Why don't we start by going around the room and everybody introducing themselves. Jordan?
Hi, I'm Jordan Richardson from Not Impossible Labs.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Manley. I'm Grover's mom.
Grover?
Hi, I'm Grover Siegel, and I'm Grover.
I'm surprised you didn't say I'm your mom's son.
And I'm Andy Siegel. I'm Grover's dad.
All right. And so the reason why we're here is to talk about adaptive technology. And the reason why we want to talk about that is because so much is being done with technology anymore that it's kind of like, how do you live without it? But the thing is, we don't think about the things that they make that actually make it easier for some to live. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we want to talk about. And let's start with Jordan. Because, Jordan, you're with a company that's you referred to as an incubator. I think of chickens and eggs when I think of incubators.
Close enough, yeah.
It's the right idea because you're incubating an idea. Correct. Until it becomes something. And why don't you just give me all the details about what that is?
Sure. So we invent and iterate on technology that we say is for the sake of humanity. So we recognize the world through what we call absurdities. So if something just we find is absurd to us, that should just not be in that way, shape, or form in this day and age, then we set out to solve that through a technology advancement. And then once we do that technology, we then tell the story through usually beautiful content and the form usually of a mini documentary, and then we spread it and disseminate that so it actually helps the masses, going with our motto, help one, help many.
And so the goal is, if you can make something special for one, a manufacturer could pick up the idea and make it for many?
Could be. Our first initial projects that we did, which we call legacy projects, like the iWriter and Project Daniel and things of that nature, those are actually open source. So we release those via open source so people can iterate and change those technologies and make it even better than we did at times. But we do have products that we're working on that we will be going on the consumer level, hopefully in the next year, going to market.
So another one at the table is Tashaka Armstrong, and Tashaka is a technology producer here at Fox 11, and largely your life has been all about being able to test things that companies send us, because they're looking for exposure, they're looking for people to hear about their products. They come to you, and then you sift through this stuff, and then you sort of give us an idea of whether it's a good story or not. Is that right?
Yeah, and essentially what happened was my kind of entrance into this realm was I had been an editor for years, and I was—
And a pretty good one. I just want to throw that in.
I may have won an Emmy or two. Or maybe something.
maybe on one of my stories.
Quite possibly. And so we worked investigative for many years. So this was back when MySpace and all these things were a thing, and I have children. I have a daughter, and I used to see how people would take advantage of young ladies online, and so I thought there has to be some way to deal with this, to fight this. So my wife and I started a nonprofit organization called Digital Shepherds, where we went around teaching digital literacy and internet safety. So as a kind of a byproduct of doing that, I would test out products to see how safe they were for families to use, what some of the loopholes were and family use, and how parents could protect their children against some of these things online.
So one of the things that we got into a conversation about was this notion of how technology is being used to help those who are disabled. Mm-hmm. And so, for instance, Grover is dealing with and has dealt with very, very well over the years a birth defect. Yeah. So one of his limbs, his arms, is shorter than the other one. And so the hand is not fully formed. Is that the way to describe that?
Exactly.
And so you know, he's doing fine. I mean, you know, he can probably punch somebody in the nose real easily. But the thing is, with adaptive technology, he can punch him even better, right?
Well, you know, I imagine he could, especially at some point we get. So there's so many different realms to this. I think one of the things is we think of like these big technologies that are amazing, you know, cybernetics and prosthetics and all these things. But you have to think that technology enables other things like email and text messaging for people who are deaf was a huge advancement. Because now they're able to text message with somebody and communicate, where before you'd see some of the older movies and they'd be carrying around a tablet or a piece of paper. They'd have to write something out and give that to mm-hmm. somebody.
Well, they also had TTYs for telephone technology.
For telephone,
and,
yeah.
And now with this, with the smartphone, you can do almost anything, yeah. really. So
it's what the technology enables. So it's not always the direct technology. It's what enables. For my brother-in-law, who is deaf, he came and stayed with us, and he was transitioning into a different job. And so my wife was helping him out, making sure he got up in the morning because he didn't have this alarm clock, this special alarm clock that he had at home. So we actually got him a smartwatch, not because he needed a smartwatch, but because a lot of smartwatches have what they call silent alarms that vibrate. So he can wear the alarm on his wrist and set his alarm for 4:45 in the morning. And it doesn't have to be a 32 decibel sound that he can hear. He's not fully, you know, he's not fully deaf, but now he can vibrate on his arm and wake him up. So many uses in so many areas.
And with phones, you can take the light on the back, which is used for photography, and you can turn that on as something that will flash yeah. when you get a phone call mm-hmm. or a yes. message or notification. So even that technology, which has always really been around, mm-hmm. you know, somebody who is deaf, phone rings, how do they know? Some light bulb is going off in the living room. That's how they know. Now your phone can do that. Your smartphone can do that easily enough. So
I think when I first met Mick, I was at a conference, and that's where I first found out about Project Daniel. And I think that really is where this begins, is with people yeah. who want to just help other people. Because technology by itself is not democratizing like everybody always says it is. It is not enabling like everybody says it is. It's people using technology that's actually democratizing and enabling. Because you can put computers in a classroom or kids who've never had a computers, but if you don't put a good teacher in the classroom to help those kids with the computers, then their education isn't going to be quite as solid. And there's actually research that shows this.
Yeah, so, you know, I as somebody who doesn't really feel like a techno geek, I feel like I understand a lot of this pretty well. I'm intimidated by it sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I can only imagine that somebody who is intimidated by it is intimidated by it even more than I'm intimidated by it.
Yeah. You know, and Shaka, you said a really good point. And our founder, Mick Ebeling, you know, he instills in us that through helping one person, you can help the many. But a lot of people don't even want to take that initial first step, right? If you say today, oh, I want to go solve cancer, that's a huge mountain that you're not going to even start to attempt to climb because you're already inundated with the pressures and the fear of failure. But if you say, I'm going to help my one friend make their life a little bit easier while they're going through chemotherapy, and I'm going to find a solution to help them on their day-to-day basis, then you're going to be more apt to solve that solution for that one person. And then by helping that one person, hopefully you can have it spread to many people, which goes back to our mantra.
So when you were saying that, I was just Googling something because I was remembering that line from Dr. Spock in Star Trek mm-hmm. about the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when you make something for a few, it can become something for the many.
I'd love to add, too, that one of the things I love about what you guys are talking about and Not Impossible is the idea of being able to make this and make it accessible to everybody. Because
yes.
right now we know a lot of children who want to run. And those blades that allow them to run are very expensive, and insurance doesn't cover them.
Sure.
So to be able to have this technology where we're soon going to start making these own things for ourselves, for our own use, is going to be amazing. It's going to give freedom to children, freedom to adults, and I really believe in that. So I'm grateful for you.
And that's an absurdity, right? That's
yes.
a personal absurdity that you see that you think is, wow, why am I waiting for a prosthetic that costs this amount of money?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you guys are going to be the ones that comes up with the low-cost accessible version of that. And
right.
I mean, there's nothing stopping anybody from doing any of these things. And so when people always say, wow, why can't I be one of those people? We always say you can be one mm-hmm. of those people.
And you know what I'm drawn to is the notion of stretching the imagination. Because
yes.
what you do is you're stretching the imagination. It's not that you're trying to think out of the box. You're just trying to think away from the box. You're trying to think of things that people haven't really thought
about.
We
don't live in a box. We don't even know box exists. Because for us,
you know how to spell that?
Yeah.
B-O-X-E-S?
Box exists. Box exists. We very much feel that if, you know, everything that was impossible at one point in time is possible today. So if the inverse of that should be true, whatever's impossible today should be in the future possible. We're gearing towards this possibility world where these solutions, we just haven't created or thought of them yet. So we're not saying, hey, we're going to go do A, B, and C. We just want to make sure that we want to help that one person find a solution, and we don't care how impossible it sounds.
But there is in me a skeptical gene. That's what makes me a journalist. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think it's great to talk in sort of romantic platitudes about, you know, things that we think we can do for the many, and we can blah, 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 and this, and the other. But the fact of the matter is, this is not such an easy thing to do.
Of course
not. And it does take money, and it does take genius to come up with some of these ideas.
Well, I will say this. That's what we do. We create technology that's accessible and it's low cost. So,
yeah, but how do you create things that are low cost when things can often just cost a lot to research them?
Sure. So take Project Daniel, for example. We feel and we know—
And that project was about?
About the Sudanese boy who had lost his arm, and we created a mobile 3D printing prosthetic lab for him.
And with that lab, you were able to create a prosthetic that fit his arm.
Correct. So when we say lab in that sense, that's a mobile maker bought from the maker 3D printer. So yes, there is a little bit of an investment that would cost to that, but his total of his arm costs about $100, whereas a prosthetic from the government can cost upwards of $10,000, $15,000, $20,000. So not only are low-tech cost solutions available, we just have to be able to craft those.
Isn't a big part of that cost, though, not necessarily the device, but all the research that went into it? So this phone right here that I have is over $1,000, right? And that's just for one.
Yeah.
And that's because they spend so much money researching these things. You would think after years and years of phones, smartphones like this, they would be able to sell them for next to nothing.
Well,
that's
where we get into profitability, right? That phone may cost you $1,000, but to cost Apple to make that, I don't know if I should bleep that out later, but to make to make a company sell that to you, how much does that really cost them to make?
It's pennies on the dollar.
Pennies on the dollar.
I can't
say the exact amount.
You can't tell me?
I couldn't. If I did, I'd probably be creating my own hacked version of that and selling it as an accessible tool for people. Because a cell phone
is it bigger than a breadbasket?
It is. The idea of it.
I mean, what the hell? I just want to, you know, sort of see if we can nail in on that. I'm fascinated by that.
I think that, you know, that when you have a piece of technology that if it's not accessible to the many, then that becomes almost an elitist thing where there's certain human rights that people should have the ability to. Do you know homeless people, the one thing that they covet more than food and shelter, do you know what it is?
Their phone.
Cell phone. Yeah.
So that's why over 90% of people who are homeless or who are transient, they have cell phones. There's affordable cell phones. You go to 7-Eleven right now and buy a smartphone just like that. You may not have unlimited data, but you can get it for $49.95 or $35.95. Mm-hmm. So there are options and solutions to that. So we don't necessarily say like, oh, it's going to and by the way, we don't know what we don't know. We're not the smartest. We don't have the degrees.
That is really profound.
We don't have
wait a minute. We don't know what we don't know.
That means we live in this naivete where I don't know how hard it is to go solve this, but guess what? Because I don't know how hard it is to solve it, I'm going to go do it, and I'm not going to let no stop me from the jump. So we definitely surround ourselves with people that are way smarter than us because we don't have the degrees, we don't have the credentials, but we also don't have the little nagging voice in our head that says, oh, this is too hard, don't do it,
What's that R. Kelly song, If You Can See It, You Can Do It? You know,
I believe I can fly,
yeah. But you know what? I've always subscribed to that notion that if you can imagine yourself doing it, then you should be able to do it.
Well, not only that, but people have – I know we're in an age where everybody's doing everything, but there is specificity. And what I love about Not Impossible Labs' model is they take individuals from different disciplines that can help solve a problem. So it's not just going to one person and expecting one person to be the genius behind and the idea behind everything. It's, oh, well, this is a problem that's going to require a software engineering solution and a mechanical engineering solution and maybe some neuroscience. And so you bring in all the people who do have the expertise and you create solutions.
We crowdsource.
Yeah,
exactly. So we did a project recently where we're redesigning a mobility device, also known as a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. And so when we usually host roundtables where we bring out networks of our people, just like you're in our network now, Tashaka's in our network, you guys are all in our network. So we bring together people to help solve a solution. Now, that doesn't cost us any money except flying people out, airplane tickets. But what we do is we'll bring somebody from not only just who knows about wheels, but skateboard companies, because they know about mobility, mobile devices that help other people in other aspects, our friends over at Northrop Grumman, or our friends who want to be a part of these solutions. So for us, again, the research is a salary of our time and a couple plane tickets and people who want to spend the time to help solve these absurdities.
And some of the things that you're making are things like a vest that helps those who are deaf feel music.
Yeah, experience it like they've never experienced it before, as well as people who are not deaf, they experience music as never before.
And you're coming up with ideas that you think people need. Why did you think they needed that?
Well, it's really a disenfranchised community, the deaf community. If you think about how many people are deaf in the world and they've never heard a song.
But you know, sometimes in the deaf community, there is a sense of culture. There is a sense of language. There is a sense of community. There isn't a sense that I'm missing something.
And we're not trying to say that they are missing something. That's the key point. There's nothing wrong with them being deaf. But what we would like to do is have them experience music in a way that they've never had to before. So as opposed to putting a balloon under your shirt to go to a concert to feel vibrations, or taking your shoes off to feel the bass.
Do people do that?
Yes. So the deaf
They put a balloon under their shirt?
Traditionally, when the deaf want to go, most deaf people have not been to, through our conversations with the deaf community, most deaf people have never been to a concert. But if they do, there's a few options they can do. They can take their shoes off to feel the vibrations of the bass on the floor. They can blow up a balloon, put it under their shirt to catch the vibrations on there, or they stand in front of a speaker. That way you're getting a boom, 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 boom. But you're
I understand
not
the speaker. I never heard about the balloons.
Yeah,
that's kind of interesting.
It's very fine-tuning catching those vibrations, but you're only going to get that one bass frequency. You're not going to hear the piccolo play or the violin thing, ramp up, or the singer whisper the soft music notes. You're not going to hear that.
You're not going to hear Moon River.
Yeah.
But this is what's so great about the technology right now is it's not people on some hill designing for other people they think who have problems. Mm-hmm. Like right now, you are including the people with the differences
Absolutely.
In their own solutions. So it's empowering as you design it, and then it's also empowering as you share it. And that was one thing we loved about Microsoft and the adaptive controllers they built, is they worked with the community to say, what do you need? You know, because we don't know.
And let me just real quickly say something that Microsoft made this device. It's for it's a game controller, mm-hmm. and it looks like two little drums,
it looks like a drum pad machine.
Yeah, and for people like Grover, who's got a limb disability, mm-hmm. you're able to use the edge of your arm to be able to do whatever it is you want to do.
You can use it however your body requires to use it. It's really adaptable.
But do you like that, Grover, better than the old one?
Honestly, I said this. I think I said this or something. Oh, never mind. But I started out using with the regular controller, so it was a little hard to adapt back to it because I found ways to work with the regular controller. But yeah, it was definitely easier. It took less time to learn this one than took to learn the regular one.
And I think, If I may use another kind of a metaphor analogy, we have to, as a culture, as a society, change how we view these differences. Mm-hmm. Because I've been a martial artist since I was very young. And so I'd have friends who come to me and say, hey, I want to put my children in martial arts. Which martial arts should I pick? And one of the things I'd always tell people is you can choose, and especially when you're older, choose a martial art based on your body type. Based on your unique physique and physiology. Because if you are a very heavy set person, you can do Wing Chun, which is what Bruce Lee initially started learning, but it's going to be it's not as advantageous because Wing Chun, as the old rumor goes, was created by a nun, a very small statured person. It was created by somebody who was creating a fighting style that would allow them to overtake larger people. Jiu-jitsu, you see, Brazilian jiu-jitsu was a huge thing in the UFC for a long time because it was created by people who were small people to overpower larger people. Mm-hmm. Judo, you're wrestling and you're throwing people. So if you are a person of large stature, judo's a great sport. Well, all this adaptive technology is no different. When your body is abled in a certain way, there are certain things that are going to work better for you than other people. And so instead of having a disability, you have an ability, and you can match technologies with your unique abilities.
And I think that's what a lot of people who are disabled feel, that they're not disabled.
Yeah.
That they're a little different, but they don't necessarily feel like they're different than anybody else. And I think that's some of what we hear in the deaf community is they have a language, they have culture, they have their own. There's nothing wrong. It's just they don't have the language the rest of us have. But that's a sidebar. I think that the thing is that, you know, with adaptive technology, there's always going to be some need you can fill.
Yeah, it's an equal playing field. It makes everybody able to join in.
Dad.
Yeah. Well, one thing that's really especially cool about the Xbox console, the adaptive one, is that it's a base onto which all kinds of customizations can be made. So it really will be up to the specific user what they're going to need from it. You can plug – it's got endless numbers of ports to plug in all kinds of different things. And I know even among the kids that were in the commercial that Grover was in, they use it in all different ways.
And let's talk about that commercial for a second, because you were in a Super Bowl commercial.
Yes.
What was that like?
It was really fun. It surprisingly went really fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know that feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything I do goes really fast, and, even this podcast. And so here you are. You show up on a Super Bowl commercial. And sometimes people just watch the Super Bowl for the commercials, right? And all of a sudden, were people running after you asking for your autograph?
Maybe not autograph, but like people sometimes recognized me.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How's that feel?
Felt really cool.
Is it cool?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know that feeling. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people recognize me.
Yeah.
Sometimes I try to run away.
Oh,
no,
yes.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding. No, that's great. You know, and I'm glad you had that opportunity because I think that's a once in a lifetime sort of deal, isn't it?
Yeah.
We had a lot of people like at our bagel store, our supermarket, after it aired. We're like, we know that guy, and they had that excitement. So it sort of brought our community together in a little tighter way. Is lovely.
What does that mean now? You want to be a TV star when you grow up?
Maybe, yeah.
All right. You heard it here first, folks.
Yeah.
Right. What the hell? Right? Yeah.
Keep a lookout for Grover Siegel.
Nice. Good shout out. All right. Well, let's sort of go around the table with a bottom line with regard to technology and its adaptive use for people that have things that they need help with. Jordan?
I think ultimately at the end of the day that we as humans and humanity have the power to decide what kind of technology we want to make. So are we going to do it for the betterment of humanity? Or are we going to do it for profitability? Is it going to be a little bit of both? And I think that as long as we keep that aspect of humanity in it, then I think the sky is the limit.
There are always unintended consequences.
Always.
Even with good things.
True.
And so have you yet run into any unintended consequences of things that you guys have designed?
I would say nothing on the negative. I think we always constantly live in a state of beta, we like to say. So maybe we haven't achieved every goal with every project that we wanted to do, but we kick the can down the road to the point where somebody else can come and pick it up at that point and move it across the line. So fortunately, nothing yet necessarily, but I think every piece of technology in the world can be used either for good or bad, and it's us to find the balance of, you know, we always like to say it's not Jekyll or Hyde, or it's not Darth or Luke, it's both. So it's the power's in our hands.
Well, what kind of projects do you have in the pipeline right now?
So Music Not Impossible is an amazing thing that we've talked about a little bit. But we also have a few things that we're working on in the more in the medical space, some of which I can't necessarily talk about right now.
But, come on, but you can tell me.
We're doing like
speaking of my lapel.
We're doing, as I had mentioned, a wheelchair mobility device redesign. We are currently helping, and we invented a piece of technology that allowed a blind skateboarder to navigate the skate park again as well. And we're doing some things that we feel can be very beneficial to people with diseases that involve tremors.
Oh, really?
So,
wow.
More to come on that next
time. Mom, what do you think about all that?
I feel really grateful. We're living in a world where we have this access for our children, for our families. And what I'm really loving is that the conversation isn't about fixing or making whole, that it's really about adding on in a way that's cool and exciting and interesting, so that by putting on a prosthetic, it's not an action of, oh, I'm trying to make myself better. It's like, look at this cool thing I can do. And we've always tried to raise Grover in that way, that he knows, like, he's whole, his hand is awesome, and I'm just so grateful for the excitement and inspiration that's happening around the world.
Grover, what's the bottom line?
Well, I agree with everything they're saying.
That's a nice diplomatic approach. You thinking about running for president someday?
Maybe.
You could have a TV show, and next thing you know, you could be in the White House.
Yeah.
Yeah, it can happen. And
it
Dad,
has
what's
happened.
It has happened? Yeah. And then Dad, what's your bottom line?
My bottom line, I also agree, and I just, you know, this has just been such an amazing journey that we've gotten to take with our boy here. I mean, we never would have expected it, and look at us now. We're here on this podcast.
Well, awesome. That's true, but I mean, he's 11 years old now. Mm-hmm. In the first 11 years, were there some pretty challenging moments when you were trying to deal with teaching him to do things, learning how to function in ways that maybe were not comfortable?
Sure. You know, it's hard to know sometimes what the difference is it would have been for any other kid in terms of teaching how to tie shoes or things like that. There obviously are some things like tying shoes that we have to find specific workarounds for.
Loafers.
Velcro.
You know, from a kind of an attitude perspective, I have to say it has not been challenging for us personally. I think that Grover has just embodied a can-do spirit and a positivity about it all. And I think that when we come across something that looks challenging, we do start to think, well, how do we go about this? It's helpful to have videos online from people all around the world who describe how they do things. We also have had association with a wonderful sports camp in Southern Illinois called Nubability that is full of kids and coaches with limb differences, both upper and lower. And we've learned a tremendous amount from them and also gained a tremendous amount of sense of community.
It's interesting. Limb differences is a term I never heard of before our meeting.
Yeah.
And it makes sense to me. But it's so funny how we tend to put things in language that is politically comfortable. Mm-hmm. For instance, if you're deaf, you may be hearing impaired. If you're blind, you may be visually impaired. Mm-hmm. If you have a birth defect on your arm, you've got a limb difference.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think part of it is that, in a way, I mean, yes, there is something that represents a standard that most people have, but in a way, who are we to say what the correct one is, or, you know, and sometimes having what might be perceived as a limitation in one sense will create a workaround that actually could have its own impact and beauty in the world that never would have come.
Well, the one thing I've noticed about Grover is, number one, He's the only person I've ever known named Grover, except there was that guy on Sesame Street and then one president of the United States, right?
Yes. Okay.
But other than that, I've never known anybody named Grover, so this has been a fortuitous meeting from that regard.
Yes.
I've never known anybody who actually had the kind of limb difference that you have, and so that's been a real eye-opening learning experience for me to hear about that. But what I really like a lot is your attitude, because you have this big smile that lights up a room. No, I'm serious. I'm being honest. And I think that carries you a long way in working with people and getting to know people and stuff like that. And so when you came off of that commercial with Apple,
Microsoft.
Yeah, I'm sorry, that's my bad. Come here. To Shaka, I want you to say a final thought here. Don't go away yet. I'm going to finish with you in a second.
Okay.
Tashaka's got to run, but give us some final thought.
I'm just happy to see people like Grover and people like Jordan here, because I think the things you've said in terms of we have to have a cultural shift, where I was reading something the other day that said we spend like 8 cents on the dollar, 7 cents on the dollar on things like medical and education, and 27 cents on the dollar for Department of Defense spending, military spending. So I think we have to really, as a people, decide what we value the most. Are we going to value education and raising up people who can solve our problems? Or are we going to be on the back end and dealing with symptoms of problems? Mm-hmm. So we're going to get to the root, or we're going to deal with symptoms. And I think inclusivity and dealing with adaptive technology is a beautiful space that just typifies kind of what we as a society really treasure.
I agree. I mean, I don't disagree with the word you said. I think it is a beautiful space. I think there's a lot to be done there. And back to what I was saying about you. You're ready, aren't you?
Yes.
Yes. You're a good kid.
Thanks.
You're welcome. And again, keep up the attitude, because that's going to get you a long way.
Okay.
Okay? Is that a deal?
Yep. Deal.
Okay, yeah. Okay, fist bumps.
Fist bump.
Gotcha. I want to thank Grover Siegel as Dad Andy and Mom Jennifer Manley. Also want to thank Tashaka Armstrong from Fox 11 for being part of this conversation. And Jordan Richardson. What an interesting area of conversation and development. Things that make people's lives better. If you haven't subscribed to us, please do. And we'll see you next time.